bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
The DOJ broke the law 287,000 times. They broke the law 38 times an hour. I don't think that they should have an extension of the authorities that have been so gravely abused.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you joined us. That was Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz that you just heard. He was one of 19 Republicans who joined 209 Democrats and killed a vote on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, reauthorization on Wednesday. Now, the government uses Section 702 of FISA to spy on you without permission. FISA allows the NSA to intercept wide swaths of foreign communications without individual court orders. But this wide net regularly captures communications of Americans on U.S. soil, and so it's been rightly criticized for violating the Fourth Amendment. Now, lawmakers who oppose automatic renewal simply want intelligence communities to have to get a warrant before spying on you. You would think that isn't too much to ask. But Speaker Mike Johnson, Mr. So-called constitutional expert, who seems to become more swampy with every passing minute he spends in Washington, wanted to reauthorize FISA without a single reform. He probably bought hook, line, and sinker, whatever scary spiel the intelligence community fed him. Well, now he's got no choice but to regroup and work on FISA reform. The deadline is April 19th, but despite the program's authorization lapsing soon, most of the surveillance activities can continue for up to a year. Isn't that a relief? Here are the 19 Republicans who voted against advancing this bill. Andy Biggs, Dan Bishop, Lauren Boebert, Tim Burchett, Michael Cloud, Eli Crane, Matt Gaetz, Bob Good, Paul Gosar, Clay Higgins, Ana Paulina Luna, Nancy Mace, Corey Mills, Ralph Norman, Andy Ogles, Scott Perry, Matt Rosendale, Chip Roy, and Greg Stube. That's it. And here's Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett telling Steve Bannon the four places where communism still exists in the world.
You know, and when I'm told by a member of the State Department, and that is a, let me tell you what they are. They are a assistant secretary at the State Department that search warrants are problematic. Yeah. Mr. Bannon, you know what's problematic to the State Department is our Constitution. I've said this before. Communism's alive in about four places in the world. China, Russia, Cuba, and the United States State Department. These folks want to tear this place down, and this is a clear example. This is what they tried to bring Trump down with, as you know, was this FISA deal. They were Carter Page, all that stuff. But let me explain to you real quick. Say whoever wants to spy on you, an American citizen, Steve Bannon. So you got a guy who's cutting your yard, or maybe somebody work. You got a contractor who's got somebody working on your roof. And guess what? Maybe one of those cats is not an American citizen, and you were to call them, or they were to call you and say, "Mr. Bannon, I need some more shingles. I'm going to run out and get some more gas. We got to mow the yard, whatever." And you say, "Okay, that's great. You go ahead." Well, your phone shows up on their dadgum phone record as an American citizen. They backdoor you through this guy or gal who's not an American citizen, even if they're here legally. Then they use that to spy on you.
Joining me to discuss today's stories is editor-in-chief of the New American Magazine, Gary Benoit, and executive senior editor, Steve Bonta. All right, gentlemen, there's so much there, but I think the first obvious question is, why did the other 199 Republicans vote to reauthorize this? And, you know, isn't it interesting that it's the Democrats who were the bulk of the votes against reauthorizing of FISA? Steve, I'm going to go to you first. What are your thoughts?
I don't know the answer to your question. I really don't, because I'm not privy to all the behind
you mean
behind
you don't closed read doors. Minds?
No, but it has been a fact. I mean, certainly over the decades that the Republicans have sort of, at least the rhino faction that has commandeered the Republican Party has been, you know, the party of militarism, of law and order, of national security.
Yeah.
And of course, it was the Republican Party under the leadership of President George, Bush the second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who
there gave us the who gave us the Patriot Act, who gave us these expansive FISA provisions, in spite of the fact that people, and there were a few, but even back then, post 9/11, on the right, ourselves included, who warned that, hey, just because it's Republicans doing it doesn't mean that it's not going to end up becoming a monumental threat to individual liberty and privacy and all the rest of this. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, here we are, yeah. You know, a couple decades later, all of these things have been borne out. But it was all originally done in the name of, you know, going out there and getting rid of those terrorists and putting down America's enemies and all this type of thing, which sounded good superficially at the time to a lot of people who didn't think the matter through sufficiently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's clearly no doubt that there are threats. There's clearly no, especially thanks to this regime's opening of the borders, where the threats have most likely exacerbated. They've gotten worse. They've gotten bigger, all of that. But you know what happens, and you can hear from the conversations of these folks, is they pull them in apparently to these, and Timbrechet was talking about this too earlier in the clip. They pull them in into these secret meetings in the SCIF, I think it stands for like secure location or something. And they tell them about how much of a threat that we're under. But Timbrechet, he said, it's like, look, I've heard the spiel. But the thing about it is, like, they never give them any specifics. It's all just like generalities. And so clearly,
Security and all that.
Yeah. For national, right. Exactly. For security. We can't tell you all the details.
We know Iran's going to strike the United States any day and retaliate. We don't know. We can't tell you how we know, but we just know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So let's ramp up the security.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Gary, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think it's once again, further confirmation that you cannot go by the R or the D after a person's name.
Ah, there you go.
Because here we had the Democrats in this particular vote voting the right way, and we have most of the Republicans voting the wrong way, voting against the Constitution. So let's go by the Constitution.
Yeah.
Let's not go by an R or a D following somebody's name. So that's part of what I make of it. But I want to point out, too, that this reference to 200,000 violations – that's what we know of. Exactly. I strongly suspect that is simply the tip of a very, very large iceberg. That is what is being acknowledged. How many other violations are taking place that we don't know about? The Constitution is being shredded by people who have taken an oath to support the Constitution.
Yeah. Well, and that's Burchett's point there is he's, and that's why we play that is like, you know, it's in the way that the people who are in charge, these leaders and intelligence, whatever, they are so on the other side of the fence as far as what rights should be appreciated, what laws should be adhered to. They don't seem to care.
Well, there's something else that I think, you know, that Burchett, the comment that he made was that, you know, the State Department is one of the last refugia of communism.
Yeah.
Well, and why is that? Let's unpackage that for a minute. Well, the
Please
State
do.
Department is the primary place in D.C. where all the foreign policy people go. Why is that significant? Because the number one organ of the globalist establishment in the United States is called what? The Council on Foreign Relations. It was founded in the beginning by a bunch of foreign policy wonks types back in the early 1920s, okay, the equivalent. And these types of globalist elites have always gravitated toward foreign policy, the State Department in particular, because they know that that's the one domain where they probably the prospects for enacting this messianic vision of the secular world government can be enacted. Why? Because they use treaty law, including the UN treaty, for example, to supersede the Constitution.
Yeah.
Okay, they know this. They understand this. And so the State Department has always been infested with these types, so you can't trust anything coming out of the State Department, and by extension, the Department of Homeland Security, which is kind of almost joined at the hip with those guys as well.
Yeah. I mean, Steve, what you're describing sounds like the State Department is an enemy of the American people.
Well, it's just that there are very few people who are, for some reason, there seem to be very few people who are really, really interested in foreign policy, that's their thing, you know, diplomacy and foreign policy, who aren't also naturally inclined toward globalism.
Mm.
Okay. I mean, you just see this again, even for the ones that aren't CFR, the very small number of prominent, you know, foreign policy people in DC who aren't part of the CFR axis. They all are, almost all of them are in sync with it. You know, so it's very unusual. I happen to be very interested in foreign policy myself, and I'm not a globalist, and I'm acutely aware of the fact that I'm weird, you know, that way. I've traveled and lived in other countries and stuff, but I'm not a globalist.
Yeah.
And that's just a very
Sometimes
strange thing.
Sometimes you wonder, Steve, you know.
Yeah, right. And before wrapping up this segment, I think it really would be wonderful to give a shout out to Joseph McCarthy, Senator Joseph McCarthy, because he was absolutely correct.
Yes, good point. Thank you, Gary. After this, Senate Republicans are planning to grind all Senate work to a halt over Mayorkas. If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two. One for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and The Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. And we're back, folks. Steve, you wanted to add one more thing on the last story before we move to the next.
Well, as a trained linguist, I always pay attention to the words people use. And I know a lot of this might come across to our viewers and listeners as being very complex. And a lot of people don't have time to study all the niceties of foreign policy. And in this case, the FISA issue. It's very complex. Okay, but here's some tools. It's come to my attention. There are certain words that when they're used in Washington, you've got to watch out. And one of them is the word tools. Whenever they talk about tools, the government needs more tools. They almost always mean more illicit, illegitimate power. Uh-huh. And this term tools has been used again and again in the justification of this FISA. Every time it comes up for renewal, they say, well, we need these tools in order to properly provide, you know, the intelligence and counter and so forth. So tools is one of those words to look out for. Another one is sweeping, which we're going to mention in a later segment.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was growing up, tool meant like, you are a tool of whoever or the stooge. And I would say that the Republicans in this case have been tools of the intelligence agencies.
And I wonder with the State Department if it might mean tools being the hammer and sickle.
Yeah.
Because of their communist leanings.
Exactly. Thanks, Gary. All right. Well, after weeks of delay and political wrangling, the Senate impeachment trial of Alejandro Mayorkas is set to begin next week. Maybe. It's an open secret that Senate Democrats led by swamp rat Chuck Schumer have no intention of turning against Mayorkas. As Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Mayorkas has presided over the most disastrous border policy in American history, and it's no secret why he's doing it. Here's Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana confronting Mayorkas about the very reason Democrats are letting in millions of illegals.
Isn't it a fact, Mr. Secretary, that the number of illegal immigrants that you and the president allow into our country counts for congressional district reapportionment?
Senator, I'm not sure I understand your question, but I can surely share with you that I disagree with its phrasing.
Isn't it true, Mr. Secretary, that the number of illegal immigrants that you and President Biden have allowed into our country counts for allocating electoral votes?
Same answer.
You don't know?
I don't understand your question.
Never crossed your mind?
The notion, Senator, that we intend to allow illegal immigration is nothing short of preposterous.
So you do understand my question?
And if I may.
You do this every single time. And it's a fact, and you know it, and I know it, that the more people you allow into our country illegally, the more people are counted for reapportionment. And the more people that you allow into our country illegally, the more people are counted for allocating electoral votes. Now, maybe that's a coincidence, but that's a fact. And you know that. And you've done nothing. for 4 years. Nada. Zero.
Absolutely false.
Zilch. And in fact, the only people I know in this country who are better off today than they were 4 years ago are illegal immigrants.
Unfortunately, Mayorkas is in zero danger of being fired from office for his criminal behavior. But Democrats want to spare him a Senate trial as well. They know that even with an acquittal, more exposure of the immigration crisis won't do the party of chaos any favors. As a result, Schumer and the Democrats are planning to dismiss the impeachment charges without a trial. And this, in effect, is a refusal to carry out their constitutionally mandated duty. But Senate Republicans, according to an exclusive from Fox News, are threatening to shut down the Senate if Schumer and the Democrats insist on not holding a Senate trial. Senate leaders have also persuaded House Speaker Mike Johnson to delay sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate until next week, probably to buy a little more time to strategize. Mayorkas, by the way, has finally admitted to the border being a crisis, in a crisis. Here he is doing so to Representative Ashley Hinson of Iowa on Wednesday before the House Appropriations Committee.
I do understand the challenges at the border, and I certainly don't dance around them. As a matter of fact,
would you call it a crisis at the southern border?
Yes, I would.
All right, gentlemen, there we go. We got a lot to unpack here. Steve, where do you want to start?
Well, there's not much to unpack, really. What we just saw was the face of a man who knows, I'm talking about Mayorkas here, a man who's smugly secure that he can continue his criminal enterprise for at least a few more months and possibly 4 more years and change, okay, with zero accountability.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not some semblance of a sham impeachment trial is held in the Senate, he knows already, and so do all the Democrats,
yeah,
what the outcome is going to be. Okay. He also knows, as the senator said, he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's
and
doing
he
kind of
lying too. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's a shameless, he's a shameless liar and fabulist,
yeah,
like most of the other people in this administration, all of them really. Okay. And their cohorts in the Democratic side. We are living in an age of the lie like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And we're witnessing, you know, nothing short, probably the greatest single criminal act ever perpetrated on American soil in American history. And nothing is going to be done about it.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, even if Trump sweeps triumphantly back into office with Republican majorities in both houses, nothing will be done about it then. Because I refer you back to the last Trump administration when he enjoyed 2 years of majority in Congress from 2016, 2018, had all the opportunity in the world to go after Hillary Clinton for all of her obvious, equally flagrant, you know, in-your-face criminal behavior, and nothing was done about it. So I hate to be a damp rag, but that's what's happening.
Gary, bring us some good news here. Give us like an optimistic outlook
there. I think something can be done. Obviously, Steve was correct in everything he said in terms of history.
Yeah.
But people can change history. History is not something which is programmed to just go a certain way from the beginning of time until the end of time.
Yeah.
People make history. And individuals make history.
Yeah.
Movements make history. And so things can be changed.
Well, I would, you know, I hear a lot about how when Trump was first in office, there were a lot of things that he didn't understand. You know, the guy was obviously new to politics, but he also didn't see the attacks coming against him. And basically what I'm saying is, I think if Trump somehow manages to overcome the massive amount of cheating and the attacks and whatever, and does somehow get in there, the Democrats are already doing a lot of pre-programming where they're saying that he's going to be vengeful. And what they're trying to say is that, true, they're going to adjudicate some of this stuff. I hope so. And I hope this guy in whoever is in cahoots in this criminal enterprise that is the opening of our borders is one of the first things that is investigated, because it would make no sense for him to adjudicate anything else and not come down on what is happening with this border. It is criminal. It is absolutely criminal.
Politics seldom makes sense, Paul. Just want to point that out.
Right, right.
I hate to sound negative about this, but we had a nice opportunity back in 2016 to 2018, and we saw what happened. Okay. Now, to Gary's point, yes, history can be changed. Although if history is past, then no, it can't be. The future can be. I mean, right. we can change the course that we're on now. But that's going to require, quite frankly, by my reading, a lot greater level of general understanding than we have now. I mean, I think we're in a positive trajectory, but I think we've got a ways to go yet before we can really, I mean, we're seeing that right now. I mean, all the stuff that's happening, and we've got two more stories coming up today. One in particular is just the flagrant violation, in this case, the Second Amendment, all these things that are just being done with impunity, with legislative and judicial impunity by the executive branch. Mm. And it's being allowed because there are so many Americans who do not know what we, I'm not going to put this politely, you know, don't understand what our republic is supposed to be, how the Constitution is supposed to work, all this type of thing, because they can't be bothered.
But at the same time, though, the conspiracy against God and man, and that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
A conspiracy against God and man is much more in the open than it was years ago. And because it's more in the open, and it has to become more in the open, is that would-be totalitarians were to consolidate total and absolute power, more people see it. Mm. And of the more people who see it, more people will become involved and do something about it.
I want to push back on what Steve said, because I don't think it's a matter of Americans not knowing. They know the border crisis exists. They know these people are corrupt. But obviously, the system is not working as it's designed. So in this case, I'm not sure I'd put this on the American people. We're going to come right back, and we're going to talk about the latest attack on the Second Amendment.
Can you believe, with all the recent violent protests, looting, and destruction, some areas are considering either defunding or abolishing the police? At a time when America's neighborhoods need the protection of police the most, some elected officials would rather create more chaos by playing politics. If you're sick of elected officials caving in to demands of the radical left, you're not alone. It's time we stand up and declare our support for local police. The majority of police officers are important partners in protecting our God-given rights. If you prefer freedom over chaos, then learn how you can help protect the local police that serve your community. Call today and request your free Support Your Local Police info packet. Dial 800-JBS-USA1. That's 800-JBS-USA1. Request your free Support Your Local Police info packet by calling 800-JBS-USA1 today.
Breaking early on Thursday is more bad news for the Second Amendment. According to reports, the Biden administration is issuing a rule designed to close a gap that allows gun buyers to avoid background checks. The Justice Department's rule targets the so-called gun show loophole by expanding the definition of who needs a license to sell firearms. Now, the regulation specifically targets sellers online and at gun shows where they say background checks aren't always conducted. A Justice Department official said the rule, however, does not equate with universal background checks, which would extend to people who sell guns from a private collection or as a hobby. All right, guys, make no mistake about it. That's where they want to go. Now, they have been, this has been one of the, I think one of the better campaigns or one of the more, the bigger success stories, I think, of over the years. Gun sales, and I say this every time we do a 2A story, gun sales have skyrocketed over the last 10 years. They specifically skyrocketed in 2020 in response to the Black Lives Matter riots, the Antifa riots. People realized then what we've been saying for decades, that the cops won't always be there to protect you. You are going to have to provide your own self-defense at some point. There will be chaos. This isn't a perfect society here. But this rule here, Steve or Gary, I'll go to you first. Isn't this the kind of thing that should probably pass through some sort of legislative process?
Absolutely. And even if it were to go through some legislative process, it should be a law that would be declared null and void, right? Because it's not in conformity with the Constitution. It's in conflict with the Second Amendment. And Congress does not have a right to pass any law it chooses.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Supremacy Clause, it only has a right to pass those laws that are constitutional. And this is not in accordance with the Constitution.
Well, it doesn't matter, does it, Steve? Because this, how do you figure this is going to go, though? I imagine the gun lobbies already, the gun groups are already saying this is going to be challenged. But it seems like there's some sort of haste on this administration, whether it be opening the borders, whether it be trying to clamp down on gun rights as much as possible, to just cram as much down and wrap its coils around the American people's rights and liberties as possible before possibly, I don't know, November or something else, maybe something else.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously, there's genuine concern now that despite all of their efforts to the contrary, that Trump may get back into office. The Republicans may come off triumphant in the fall, and that would be bad news for the gun confiscation people. So they're trying to do as much damage as they can possibly do. Again, you know, now, to your earlier point, that's not speculative. They came out and said, the administration said, in effect, in announcing this new UKs about guns, okay, and just so we're clear, I use the word advisedly because it has exactly as much constitutional validity as an old czarist UKs out of Russia. That's what it is, okay? So hopefully it will be struck down in due course by the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court has proven a weak reed to lean on in matters such as these. So we'll see. In any case, because of course we already have
wild card, those parts.
We already have background checks, and the Supreme Court hasn't struck those down. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are run. So I'm sure they're assuming that by doing this, that they'll be able to argue. Well, look, you know, we already have all this other precedent for years and years. You know, the background checks that are run when you so how is this any different? Okay, which is a tough question.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, but leaving all of that aside, I mean. They made it clear, the Biden administration made it clear that the real goal here is universal background checks.
Yep.
Okay. And that they feel will need to be accomplished by a piece of congressional legislation once conditions are suitable. I would wager that if my gloomiest predictions and forecasts are correct and Biden somehow does get reelected along with, you know, the Democrats retaking the House, we'll probably get that legislation very soon.
Where they go after private.
Yeah, they're going to. Well, sales. Yeah, sure. So that you'll literally no longer be able to transfer a firearm under any circumstances without letting the federal government know. Once that is accomplished, okay, once that is accomplished, it will then become, frankly, a fairly nugatory matter to then confiscate guns at will. Okay. I mean, a lot has been said in recent years that, oh, well, you know, America's awash in guns. We've got, you know, hundreds of millions in guns. There's no way they're going to be able to confiscate them. I mean, technically, that's true.
Right.
But we do have an awesome array of surveillance and tracking and
that'll make it possible.
All these registries and everything will make it possible, at least in practice.
Yeah, yeah. Okay? I mean, even if you got your gun from a private seller, I mean, you eventually buy ammo for it. And since they track everything, they have all sorts of ways. I want to lay out a hypothetical here. And that is, like, let's say there's some sort of nefarious plan to turn a people's country into something that they don't want it to be.
Is that hypothetical?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, Gary, just play along here. And you know that the people won't go along with it. And so maybe what you may want to do is you want to take all these steps to prepare yourself for this resistance. Now, of course, this they haven't been successful in taking the guns. They haven't been successful in outlawing buying guns, and especially even specific ones. But what they're looking to do, at least, it seems like they at least want to know, like you said, where they are, because that's the next best thing. Because then once you can weaponize the military or you can bring some forces in there, once you know where they are, that's a big, big step. And this is what the Nazis did, that all sorts of countries in Europe that they did before they went all totalitarian on them. This is what's happening, actually. You're right, Gary. It's not hypothetical. That's what they want. They want to get to the next best place, and that is at least knowing where they are before they can at least take them.
And really, I don't think you can understand what's happening with the gun issue without recognizing that is the end goal. The end goal is to give the government a monopoly of power.
On
where
power.
Where the people are disarmed, yes. Where the government becomes a criminal state,
yep.
And the government has the weapons, and the government is able to exercise control over everything and everyone. That is what the people behind the gun grab actually want.
But keep in mind, though, because we keep learning about we keep getting new windows, new glimpses into how much these people hate us. Okay, we know that the government's been captured in certain departments. I don't know the portion of it. I don't know how many good guys there are, how many bad guys there are. But clearly, there are people within the government who work for us, or supposed to work for us, who hate us. We saw in the first story, Tim Burchett talking about these people from the State Department who have no respect for the rule of law, no respect for our privacy. These people are everywhere. They're in the DOJ, obviously. They're in the FBI and the CIA. They're spying on us and they hate us. There's all sorts of signs. And so the only next step is if for them to have enough force, enough power to subjugate us so they can turn us into whatever, you know, transsexual, transhumanist, totalitarian hellhole that they want to turn this country into. That's what it is.
Well, I mean, there are two things that seem to be top agenda items. One is having total, absolute ascendancy over firearms, you know, knowing where they are, who has them, and eventually making sure that the only who's that have them are in the government.
Yep.
Okay. And the other is, of course, which we talk about probably a lot more in this show, is absolute control over money, over finances, of tracking, you know, if they can do that, if they can ensure that that every penny you spent is being tracked and monitored so they know where all the money's going, and if they know that you're either disarmed or what weapons you have, they know precisely where they are, and you're allowed, you know, I don't know, 20 total rounds of ammo or whatever, this type of thing, they've got you. You know, we will be in a situation, we will be in a true Orwellian nightmare.
Yeah.
And we're getting very close to that. We have the means to bring this about already. They out there, them, the ones that are doing this, okay? And we're allowing it to happen.
Yeah.
But this is going to snowball unless a stand is made. I hope in this case, you know, that this thing will be challenged quickly.
Sure, I'm sure.
And
will be
set aside.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah. Well, that we'll definitely we'll be watching this, and I hope it obviously is challenged. But like you said, people need to wake up. I mean, just because they're not, this doesn't go against private sales right now or private transaction, it doesn't mean that's not
where they want to go. Well, that's coming very, very soon.
That is where they want to go. This people need to stop this before it gets any worse, any bigger. This is really important. All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you. And we are going to talk about a really curious story about a journalist from NPR who came out and told us about what is happening in mainstream media, and you won't be surprised to find out any of it.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed, put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, The New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.
For years now, we've watched the mainstream news media wage war on Trump, his supporters, Republicans, and anyone who refuses to buy into this new socialist, gender-confused version of America they want to create. We've seen blatant propaganda masquerading as journalism, beginning with the media support of the Democrats' Russiagate hoax, and continuing with COVID, George Floyd and BLM, and Hunter Biden laptop, the 2020 election, and all anti-Trump lawfare. Now, this is still happening today, and its perpetrators don't feel any remorse for their corrupt, unethical behavior. Except for one. One member in the mainstream news media, award-winning veteran reporter Uri Berliner, has written a tell-all piece about how NPR moved away from journalism into propaganda for the radical left. Berliner, a professed liberal, wrote about how NPR went after the Russiagate hoax with a partisan vengeance. Trump antagonist Adam Schiff became NPR's guiding hand, its ever-present muse, he said. Schiff was invited on NPR at least 25 times to talk about Trump and Russia. But when the whole thing was discredited, rather than acknowledging the mistake, Russiagate quietly faded from our coverage, Berliner admitted. He went on to describe similar scenarios with the Hunter Biden laptop story, the George Floyd story, and the COVID origin story. In every case, NPR jumped on the leftist establishment anti-Trump narrative and suppressed opposing points of views. All right, Steve, so you were really taken with the story. I got to say, He didn't say anything we didn't know, that's for sure. But I guess he brought the receipts, huh?
Well, I think he did say some things we didn't know as to the details of what went on. But it's probably the most dramatic admission against interest by any member of the corporate media since the whole Trump phenomenon, the whole MAGA phenomenon began. It's what's blindingly obvious to those of us that are more or less on Team MAGA. Okay, of course, it is always hard to prove evidentiarily because these people typically close ranks, as we just like Mayorkas just doing, you know, in the interview. No, I don't do. And it's very hard to prove motive. Mm. You know, if you don't actually know what people are saying behind closed doors in their meetings. And I mean, yes, of course, we hope Trump, we're going to try to destroy Trump and we're going to do this and we're going to sacrifice our journalistic. You know, this is going on, but how to prove it? Mm-hmm. And here this guy comes out and says, well, in fact, yeah, this is pretty much what we did at NPR. We said these things behind closed doors. There was a clear desire to spike the stories. You know, the Hunter laptop story was, he talks about that as well. You know, he said, you know, that once it was proven that it was real, you know, we continued to ignore it and push it aside and poo-poo it. He talked about the COVID story, about the Black Lives Matter George Floyd story, and then went on to discuss, you know, the corporate climate at NPR. And I think probably what he's describing here is a pretty good, you know, representation of what we would see at all the other major news at MSNBC, at CNN, collusive agreement that, you know, we can't be journalists anymore. We've got to be advocates for a while because the Republic is in danger. So we saw Washington Post change its, you know, change its motto, democracy dies in darkness. And everybody knows exactly what that means and exactly whom is being targeted by that. Okay, that's not just a general statement of principle. Yeah. It's targeted at Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. And as long as Trump is a threat and his followers pose, you know, an existential threat to our wonderful democracy, their word, not mine. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then of course they're going to continue this advocacy. Yeah. So it was very refreshing. And I have to say, you know, as someone who was raised on NPR, who used to enjoy I used to like Car Talk. I admit the occasional episode of Prairie Home Companion, this kind of thing back in the day, even once I, you know, the scales fell off my eyes, right? Yeah, yeah. I still think, they're illegitimate and unconstitutional, you know, fed by taxpayer money, all this type of thing. But, you know, occasionally there was something. They used to, guy right down here in Madison, Wisconsin, who did a nationally syndicated, you know, variety show on NPR, this kind of thing. But that was back in the day. Nowadays, these guys are gimlet-eyed propagandists through and through. And not just the news program, not just Morning Edition, All Things Considered, as he makes clear. In the article, he goes on and he says, all the other shows is just one thing after another, talking about something involving trans, something, you know, all the most bizarre stuff. There aren't any feel-good stories about, oh, I don't know, trying to save the snail darter or something like this. They don't do that anymore. It's really, really radical,
to bottom. And you'll probably recall the part in the story where they talk about how this corporate culture now, or the culture within them, and how now they have all these like ethnic and racial quotas. And so I'm wondering, is it's like, how long can that last? Like, how can an organization, Gary, can you imagine if we operated in a way where we took everyone's age, everyone's ancestry, everyone's race into consideration?
Sexual orientation.
Yeah, orientation. I mean, there's three guys here. I mean, one of you wouldn't be here. Maybe
three
two.
White heterosexual men. What's that about? You know?
This is just insanity. It's like the way we look at things, we just look at, okay, what's going to work? You know, it's like if you were a 60-year-old woman and you'd be better at this, then that's who would be in this place. It's just like, this is...
Obviously, that's not sustainable.
I can't imagine how it is.
What's also not sustainable is lying to people again and again and again to the point where their audience realizes that they're being lied to. Now, I'm sure there's still people who listen to NPR who
not realize they're being...
Well, yes, because I do want to bring this up. And,
please
and
do.
This is the good news. And these stats have to do with NPR, but I would say that these stats probably apply to other exponents of the major media as well. But according to Berliner in his article, he says these are perilous times for news organizations. Last year, NPR laid off or bought out 10% of its staff, and canceled 4 podcasts following a slump in advertising revenue. Our radio audience is dwindling. Our podcast downloads are down from 2020. The digital stories on our website rarely have national impact. They aren't conversation starters. Our competitive advantage in audio, where for years NPR had no peer, is vanishing. There are plenty of informative and entertaining podcasts to choose from.
Yeah.
Even within our diminished audience, there's evidence of trouble at the most basic level, trust.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to contrast that to, let's say, the New American Magazine, let's say the John Birch Society, where we have been accurate over and over and over again over many, many years.
Yeah.
We have a tremendous track record. We are growing. More people are listening to us. So can you imagine a day, Paul and Steve, where no one anymore would listen to CNN, no one anymore would listen to NPR, and throngs of people, millions of people would be coming to outfits such as the New American Magazine for the news? I believe that day is coming.
I'm as optimistic in that. I mean, assuming the whole thing doesn't fall apart, I think that's where this is going, because the numbers are indisputable. Like you say, the trajectory is, you can't argue against it. I mean, CNN has had numerous shakeups, in the last 2 years?
Guys, I hate to be the wet towel again.
Oh.
But I can tell you guys don't do Facebook. Yeah. And here's the thing about Facebook. Yeah, I know it's a commie organization too, but some of the meme lords are hilarious. And one of the best memes that it's been doing the rounds in Facebook now for a couple of years, it shows these two guys like selling at booths. And in front of one of the booths, there's this long line stretching out to infinity of people waiting in line. And his sign says, "Reassuring lies."
Yes, I know.
And the guy next to him says, has booth as hard truths, and there's nobody in line.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is an issue.
So you're countering this with a meme, Steve?
I'm countering it with a meme that I think is profoundly and darkly humorously reflective of the human condition.
The data doesn't bear that out, Steve. It doesn't bear that out.
Well, then why do we still have CNN and MSNBC and all these organizations?
Well, we don't have them to the degree that we once did if they're losing their audience.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're not just going to collapse overnight, but I mean, they've had massive.
Their collapse is taking longer than the Roman Empire, I've got to say. This has been a theme for decades. Again, I hope I'm wrong, but human beings being what they are, truth has never been necessarily a majoritarian popular thing.
But truth is enduring, and there is something about truth that supersedes the inferior substitute of falsehood.
Certainly in the eternal scheme of things, that's true.
Wow. Well, that brings up this. If you're watching or listening and you do not have a subscription to the New American Magazine, go and get one. You can go to newamerican.com. I think you go under magazine there and you could subscribe. You get print, you get online content, you get podcasts, you get all sorts of stuff. And we are out of time, guys. And thank you everyone for tuning into the New American Daily. And remember to visit newamerican.com for more truth behind the news. We'll see you tomorrow.